At what point do politicians and officialdom decide that X is no longer fit for purpose? Well, Dublin City Council saw the writing on the wall. They've removed their account from the platform. And it has us wondering, will others see the logic in their thinking? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan. Now, for years, Twitter has been described as the digital town square, the place where news breaks, politics plays out and public debate happens in real time. But under Elon Musk and as X, that idea is being challenged. What was once a moderated platform has become borderline cesspool, even hosting AI-generated abuse material. Dublin City Council has said enough is enough. Others, including ministers, seem to have quietly deactivated their accounts while still stopping short of calling for a full exit. And that hesitation raises a deeper issue. Are politicians staying on X because they need it or because they were told to use it? And if X is no longer fit for democratic discourse, what, if anything, should replace it? So to talk through all of that, I'm joined by Claire O'Donoghue-Velikich of ODV Digital and Fine Gael TD and Minister of State Neil Richmond. Claire, firstly, you might start us off by telling us where your expertise in this area comes from. What are ODV Digital and what do you do?
So I am a digital consultant working with the campaigning sector. So that's politicians, political parties, non-profits and NGOs. I've been doing this for about 6.5 years, but prior to that, I was at Facebook, now known as Meta, for about 9.5 years. During that time, I set up the politics and government marketing team for Europe, Middle East and Africa. So I was there during the glory years where everybody was thinking about, you know, Obama and the Arab Spring and social media was, you know, changing democracy for the better. And it was gorgeous and beautiful. And then I was also there for the years where everything started to come downhill a little bit more. So since I've gone out on my own, my role with ODV Digital is to give advice on how to use social media and other digital tools to campaign effectively, to engage constituents in a positive way.
And so your view then on DCC leaving X, and as we suggested, others also, it's not just Dublin City Council. We are seeing some people taking that sort of quietly closing the door and retreating from it, and others maybe also using it as a statement. We're off here, we're out of here. They just didn't like the whiff of sulphur that came with Grok.
I'm very proud of Dublin City Council for doing so, and I would encourage other councils, other leaders to do so. Last week, we heard Mark Carney channeling Václav Havel, encouraging world leaders to be the brave greengrocer who takes their sign down out of the window. I think we're at that point with X, where it is time for brave leaders to take their sign down out of X's window, stop participating in it. From my perspective, the main reason that politicians and other leaders are staying on X is because other politicians and leaders are staying on X. It's a self-fulfilling, vicious circle. The only reason to be there from a politician's perspective is because journalists are there. Journalists are there because politicians are there. If there somebody has the courage to step away from it, to explore other channels, perhaps going back to more traditional ways of engaging with journalists or having civil discourse in other spaces, I believe they'll find that actually their ability to engage constituents and to connect with important leaders isn't really impacted that heavily. I'm a social media consultant. I made the choice to take myself and my business off X some time ago. And being honest with you, Tara, I wondered at some point, was this going to come back and bite me, you know, and I'd have to go back on again. Hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
It really hasn't.
Neil, are you you're still on X?
I am. I must say, though, about 2 years ago, my approach to X changed drastically. And I very much, when it was Twitter, I lived on it. And at a different time, everyone did. And it was a large part of probably how I got an element of public reputation during the Brexit years. Spiky tweets on a Sunday morning watching British news led to a profile that would lead me to be invited onto shows. But you also then at that stage were able to engage with people, be they constituents, be they journalists, be they other politicians. You would have back and forth conversations. But about 2 years ago, that changed, obviously, when it became X and I turned off the comments. And it's a fairly... My X is pretty boring. It's a fairly generic retweeting of other institutions that I'm involved in. But And Claire has hit the nail on the head. If I want to get a quick, spiky comment on an event out quickly and efficiently to journalists, that will lead to an opportunity to push forward an issue, X is still, for loads of different reasons, the primary platform to go for. The amount of people who I meet in the doors who say, I follow you on X or Twitter, as they still call it, isn't what it once was. They're still there, but I operate across all the social media platforms. I think it's a crucial part of my role as a public representative to engage. People used to mock Nixon for not catching up with JFK when they moved from radio to television. Social media was the same. When I ran for election first in 2009, it was all about my Bebo page, just to age myself.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I've tried others. You know, Telegram didn't work out. Snapchat wasn't appropriate. And certain social media platforms are great for certain things as a politician. And I hope Claire isn't going to come and counter this, because she's the professional. A lot of this, firstly, no one has told me to stay on or get off any platform from an official, like no one within government or within my political party, Fine Gael. Certainly have had part of my campaign team said, ah, look, is it worth it? And the level of abuse you get. But I must say the level of abuse on other platforms is getting worse as well. And maybe that's just lied that I'm a minister now. I'm not a councillor as I was 15 years ago. So I've stayed on it. Perhaps my use of it has changed drastically. It certainly would have taken serious pause for thought in the last 2 weeks. What happened with Croc and the nudification images, particularly those of child sex abuse, were just repugnant. But it is still part of the public square. And I'm probably outing myself as a bit of a coward here, to Claire's point, to be honest. I just don't know if me leaving at this stage, the point of me making, is going to lead to the domino effect. Because I remember one of the most high-profile politicians to leave X was, of course, Donald Trump, when he was banned from it. And here he is back again.
But I'm curious, you know, you've been very forthright in saying that you were on it essentially to garner media attention, to engage with journalists, and that would get you a further platform to talk about issues, okay? But was there any role that X played for you, or Twitter back as it was back in the day, with your constituents?
Oh yeah, strongly, twofold. First and foremost, that level of profile that you got from speaking about issues in the media meant constituents knew that you were their local senator, as I was at the time, or councillor before that. It's part of it. It's not a craven just looking for attention and trying to score media. You're trying to build a profile to get across your agenda, to represent the people who vote for you as best possible. And equally, a lot more people were proactive on Twitter as it was leading into the COVID years. In the COVID years, it got a little bit more toxic. And then obviously the change from Twitter to X completely redefined it. Still regularly, and you'll see it. I remember times, I think it was at Hurricane Ophelia, you know, bar the rolling news and the role of broadcasters, people were reliant on X for real quick time, Twitter as it was, quick time updates about storm warnings, about weather. Earlier this week, my constituency was really hit quite hard by the storm, serious flooding, real tragedy. The amount of people who still are going on to X looking for that update, are roads open? And they're forwarding X posts from the local authority or news sources into the community WhatsApp groups. People still do use it. It is a quick place to get a bite size of the news. Now, algorithms have changed that. It's not as, like 5 years ago, I wasn't clicking onto a news app from any news provider. I was going on to X. I was going on to Twitter to see what was happening in the world, particularly outside of Ireland.
Claire, do people actually need to be on it? I'm just very mindful that I had a conversation in the News Talk newsroom this morning about this, and most of my colleagues they still have X. It's still there, but they don't engage in it anymore. They don't really pay very much attention to it anymore. If they were to use it for work purposes at all, it's probably to get in touch with somebody, to send a DM, to get in touch with somebody to interview. So, you know, we have this cycle whereby the politicians are saying maybe they need it because the journalists are there, and the journalists are saying, well, they're not really there. They're only there to kind of keep an eye on maybe sending a contact to arrange an interview. Do people need to be on X at all?
I think there's a real need to distinguish between the X of 2026 and Twitter, which is long gone. I love Twitter as well. I think all of us working in politics loved Twitter. as it used to be. It really was that space for discourse, for engaging with constituents, for having both lighthearted and serious debates and so on. X is not Twitter. We have to stop conflating them too. I actually think X benefits from us sort of confusing the names sometimes, referring to it as Twitter still. And we have a lot of nostalgia for the legacy platform that used to be. The platform that X is today, as you said, Neil, an awful lot of public representatives and so on have to turn off comments because it is such a cesspool of attack and vitriol and hate speech. And it's genuinely unsafe, especially for, you know, women or anybody from minority groups and so on. It is not safe to engage in the sort of discussions that we all used to discuss 10 years ago. That's the reality of X today. So I think it's really important that we draw a line between our nostalgia for the Twitter that used to be. And like, I really miss Twitter, especially when, as you say, when news is breaking. Where do you go to? You know, we've got Blue Sky, we've got Mastodon, neither of them have really taken off, in part because everyone's still on X, or not everyone, increasingly fewer, but these other platforms just haven't taken off in the same way. At the same time, we see user behaviour on social media changing a lot compared to 10 years ago. You mentioned WhatsApp groups. We know that people are having fewer discussions in public. They're not posting on their Facebook pages. They're not posting on Instagram, but they are sharing within WhatsApp groups. So I think there's a challenge to anybody who is still using X today to really look at their social media strategy and think about, is this actually delivering meaningful goals and engaging people in the ways that I want it to in 2026, not based on how I would have liked it to back on in the old days on Twitter. And it probably means reassessing, looking at the channels that you're on and thinking about, how do I actually connect with journalists and constituents today?
And Neil, on that point, do public representatives have a higher responsibility than ordinary users when it comes to legitimising platforms like this? You said you've never been told, either by you know, government or by the political party, Fine Gael, that you're a member of, to get off it. But should there be some leadership like that? Should they be telling you to get off it, to take the moral high ground here and distance yourself?
Yeah, like there comes a part. Now, a lot of it is down to the personal responsibility of the individual, the user. You can't whip someone, to use the political term, on social media. But there certainly would have been various broadcast channels over the years that I wouldn't have gone on, the likes of, you know, Russia Today. I was never on, even before their full-scale invasion of Ukraine. GB News and Breitbart. I remember being at a conference in Paris, being chased by the Breitbart correspondent. I just said, I'm not speaking to Breitbart. You're not a news channel. You're a many things. So yeah, certainly people reflect on it. And I know my own party has reflected on it. I haven't been in those discussions because we have a very, like, we have a very detailed sort of social media guide. And we all sign up to it. And when we take the party pledge, as we call it, other parties have different terms, where, you know, the thing that nearly every person who enters a political race, the first thing, there's a rush, let's go through their history of what they posted on social media. And sometimes that will be, it turns out this person isn't who we thought they were and they have lousy opinions. And Reform UK is on a surge in the UK now. And they've literally said, we don't care what people have said in the past, because they're recruiting so many people who've said so many dreadful things. So you do get a full audit of your social media. Now, I've been an elected representative since 2009. So social media has always been there with me in terms of, only got my first political Facebook account going into the 2014 local elections. It's always been, so there's no, I would hope, that, well, no, I've done enough others. There's no old posts that would bring me down now at this stage. Plenty of people would disagree with, or things that I said at a different time, and perhaps my opinion has changed, as is right. But I think one thing is really interesting, like, I think about my social media challenges probably too much as a public representative. I know I'm not the only one, but I don't just copy and paste and chuck something up. You tailor it for each audience is so different. And certainly under Twitter, it was a very different audience than, say, Facebook. And my first responsibility as a local TD for Dunrathdown, if I want to get something local out, my priority is Facebook. It's still the biggest platform. None of my nieces and nephews are on it, but all my, you know, aunties and uncles are, and it might be the only platform they're on. Mm. And one thing that is, I find in my current role in the Department of Foreign Affairs, is it's not just about what's going on in Ireland. So I would have spent time in Kenya last year for St. Patrick's Day, and they're undergoing a series of Gen Z protests. And I met some of the youth movements, and I said, look, well, where is this coming from? And they said, X. It is still the platform of choice through sub-Saharan Africa. It's the one where they can be free, that they feel they can fully get their communication across. So it's still you know, we putting an Irish standard and everything doesn't always apply.
And that's an interesting point, Claire. You know, what may appear to us to be a cesspool and toxic really does have a value elsewhere.
I think what we're seeing on social media, of course, there's huge variations in social media use across the world. I was chatting to somebody at the weekend who was telling me that the number one social media platform in Romania is TikTok, which, of course, we know had that massive impact on the election there last year. So, of course, there's going to be national variations. There's going to be, you know, sensibilities which we need to take into account. If you have a role in foreign affairs responsibility, you're looking at other countries as well. My fear with continuing to use X simply because it is a default in certain contexts or because of the nostalgia for the platform before, is that there's two things happening on X at the moment. One is the removal of trust and safety and policies and so on, which are allowing hate speech and bullying and the normalization of language, which in a civil discourse environment, we previously wouldn't tolerate. You know, we just wouldn't be that way. We wouldn't speak to each other that way. And I think we're starting to feel like there is a movement of this, you know, toxic language and attack culture, which we've seen on social media, starting to move into real life. And this is, you know, hugely concerning if we are legitimizing those sort of voices. The other thing happening on X, of course, is the absolute proliferation of bots. Since Elon Musk pulled up the ladder on the X API, meaning that journalists and nonprofits can't actually, you know, analyze and look at what's really happening in a meaningful way on the X platform, and we have to just trust Musk's data, which, you know, come on. We know for sure that the level of content being put out by bots is exponential. And there was a commercial advertiser in the Super Bowl in 2024 who found that 75% of the traffic through their X ads was coming from bots, suggesting that as few as 25% of the people on X are actually real people and the rest are bots. This means that if we are participating in this space, we're essentially, you know, creating space for, giving oxygen to, paying undue attention to artificially amplified voices. This is not the digital town square that represents how, you know, ordinary people, you know, our constituents are feeling. These are manipulated voices run by bots, many of them coming from overseas. We've seen that with the Ireland is full hashtag, that the vast majority of the posts about this were not from within Ireland. I think there is a massive risk. And I take your point that, you know, there are going to be certain contexts in which X is still useful. But from my perspective, the downsides, the risks and the negative impacts on both on ourselves and on society as a whole are too much to ignore.
And that's a very good point because, I mean, you're in the business of analysing. Neil, you're a politician. You're, you know, you've got to scrutinise. I'm a journalist. We will always tease and look behind. But for the vast majority of people, ordinary, everyday people who are on X and other social media sites, they're not doing that. And they don't even understand that they should do it or why they should do it.
Yeah, and I'm just taking, like, as I said at the start, I turned off my comments on X 2 years ago. I turned off my comments on Facebook too. And like, sometimes you get criticism on other platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, oh, why are you deleting your comments? And I was like, well, I'm not here as a platform for hate speech or for very rank personal abuse, to be quite frank. And yeah, a lot of them are from bots on the other platforms as well. But also some of them are just ordinary people. And you go and you look at them, you go like, you've got your phone number on your Facebook page. I've rung those numbers. Jennifer Whitmore from the Social Democrats did a video of ringing back, asking people why.
Very good.
I haven't quite had that bravery, but I've definitely rung them and realised, wow, this is a real person. And they're probably wondering why they had a no caller ID call. It's quite galling that social media provides you with a level of bravery. And I go into schools a lot and you're in with TY or career classes or talking to their politics classes. And I just say, whatever you put on social media stays with you forever. And whatever you put on social media, it is real. You wouldn't say that to someone's face, to your point. But there is a license on social media that I think the ordinary punter, regardless what platform they're going on, think is fair. And I remember years ago when I was a counsellor, I made a comment about a professional sports person, nothing negative, just criticise their performance, and they blocked me the next day. And then I was like, why did I say that? And what was the point of that? Where's the responsibility on me as a user? And I always say, I see friends commenting on Premiership football or All-Irelands or whatever. It's like, what are you achieving? Like, you're putting pub talk in a public domain, and you have the right to, but sometimes it's too consequence-free. Like the amount of times I've reported users, reported comments across all platforms. And we have this regulation, we have this legislation to protect people, but it's not being enforced.
No, I know. And I think most people will have had an experience, whether it's somebody who's tried to rip them off on you know, a marketplace venue, or somebody selling gig tickets, or somebody making an unkind comment or an untrue comment. And I think most people will have at some point or other reported somebody, and you get nothing back. You get nothing back. I mean, I remember doing it fairly recently. Somebody who would have public profile, they were appearing on social media endorsing a product. And I knew damn well that wasn't legitimate. And I reported it to the site, and they came back and rejected my reporting of it. And that happens a lot. Neil, I want to ask you this. We've known it's not just an X issue. You know, this was going on social media sites before X and before Twitter, and this comment. I've present radio shows on News Talk going back 10 years ago, and you would get, after a show, some people would be making lovely comments, and you know, that's lovely. It's great to see. It would be the two or three that would be making a really negative, horrible comment that would infiltrate in your head. Why are we only even having this discussion now about, you know, the role of politics in particular on a platform like this, when it's always been toxic, really? We can't just, you know, we're all outraged by Grok, and it's been in the headlines so predominantly in the last couple of weeks in particular. And it will be again, you know, it's going to come back up before Oireachtas committees. We're going to have Comisiún Neamhain, you know, deliver reports on how we can fix this, how we can disengage from this on an authority level. But like, again, personal responsibility. Mm. Why has it taken so long for people to even be considering leaving X now, when that toxicity's always been there, really?
A couple of things there. Well, I always rely on my mother-in-law to send me the nice message, and she loves taking on the bots. I try and remind her these aren't real people, but I'm not going to stop her. But I think one thing, and I think this is a point, and I'm not here to provide any excuses or defend the social media and, say, broadcasting. I mean, look at the two origins. When the first broadcaster in the state here was the state.
Yeah.
First broadcast, the state, first broadcast was by a Roman Catholic priest. That's where it started. And it was constantly regulated and monitored because it was a state entity. And then private operators came in, disruptors, but they played by the same rules.
Yeah.
And journalists have the same standards. But now we have the rise of citizen journalists who play by no rules.
Yeah.
Social media wasn't started by the state. Social media, it is a constant that the state is trying to keep up, both in terms of regulation and enforcement. And this isn't a criticism of saying we're doing nothing. It's just, it's the constant evolution and the workarounds. To name another TD who largely disagrees with me at times, Paul Murphy was in front of the AI committee, or commenting on a essay, and he talked about a VPN. A colleague was able to undress him live at the committee using a VPN from France.
Wow.
And the point being made that we can regulate and legislate a lot in Ireland, and that'll apply to broadcast media, but social media is global. And it's how do we firstly do it at an EU level, and I'm the most pro-European member of the Dáil, and I'm unashamed about it, but I acknowledge the EU moves painstakingly slow. And there is sometimes opposition. You'll hear people say, no, this is about the virtual public square. This is about the defence of free speech. And when we brought in hate speech laws, they were attacked left, right and centre, that this is some form of censorship. And that's the thin line. So I don't think this is something new. Like, we talk about AI deepfakes and Micheál Martin trying to sell you investment schemes 2 years ago. I remember speaking in the Dáil when we were in the convention centre in the depths of COVID, talking about disinformation online. There's constant efforts from a legislative point of view to update it. There are resources put in, but you are literally trying to keep up with the train. And this isn't an excuse, this isn't a cop-out at all, but it is just to provide what I feel is a very real context.
Claire, how much of this continued presence on this platform is driven by fear? And what do companies, politicians, organisations, individuals, what do they have to fear by just pulling up the ladder and leaving?
Nothing, in my opinion. I think at this point, X is gone. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Breitbart and Russia Today. We've got Truth Social in the US. I'm not on Truth Social. Are you on Truth Social? I don't think any of us suffer from not being present on Truth Social. X is going to go the way of Truth Social. So let's just get off there first. I think you're absolutely right. It is a fear of not being there when the journalists go looking for a story, or not being there if my opponent from another party says something about me that I want to rebut. But again, let's just all step back. Let's just stop participating in the game, find other places to have that discourse. Because we had plenty of places to have this discourse before X came along. We will have them again afterwards.
And that was going to be my final question to you. Where are the places that that discourse can continue beyond the traditional forms of media maybe that we would have had before we were turned on to social media?
So I think we are at a time of real change in the social media landscape, not just X becoming what it is becoming, but as I mentioned, you know, seeing how people are using Facebook and Instagram in different ways, seeing the rise of TikTok and so on, and particularly people bringing their conversations and content sharing into closed networks like WhatsApp and so on. So it really is going to require a sort of a reassessment of what a social media strategy looks like, what a engagement process with journalists looks like and so on. I think we're also going to see increasingly as algorithms take over the way in which content is surfaced on social media, rather than it being shared by followers. You know, many politicians who are on Facebook and Instagram are seeing frustratingly that their content no longer reaches their followers. That's because the algorithms are dialing up content which is getting engagement in other places. So it's going to really mean a whole reassessment of how do we communicate with our constituents. How do we engage in that public discourse that we're looking for? And I think there's an opportunity here to set guardrails, to set parameters on what we think is acceptable and what is not acceptable. You're right that there is personal ownership that we can take off this. I mean, we talked about, you know, this only happening now. I do a fair bit of work with organizations like Women for Election and See Her Elected. I can tell you that that fear of attack and that fear of being gone after by trolls, being doxxed and so on, that has existed for women entering politics for a very long time and will continue. I hate telling them that they are personally responsible for blocking the trolls and shutting this down. They can take some ownership, but as you've experienced, our reporting content to the platforms doesn't really do much. So I think there is an obligation on legislation and on governments, or whether it's the EU, to get tougher with the platforms so that the legislation that exists is actually implemented and hitting them in their pockets in the only way that matters, and then seeing how that can evolve into something which hopefully creates a space which is less hostile, less full of trolling and attack, which is a better outcome for everybody, for politicians and for society.
Neil, very final one and quick one to you. DCC, should you be following their lead? You've said that you've been considering this. It's not what it used to be for you. Will you be so brave as to disengage and close your X account?
I don't think it'd be a matter of bravery. It'd be a matter of calculation, to be honest. And at this stage, I do get a return from X. I still get constituents get in touch with me. I still get people contacting saying, I saw you posted that. Can you give me your information of that? So I'm hesitant, to be honest, to remove myself, because then you just leave it is. And I just have a very final point, and I'm going to sound like an old fuddy-duddy here. No politician has ever been elected by social media alone. Canvassing face-to-face is still the most important thing we can do.
Absolutely. Neil, Claire, thank you so much for joining us on News Talk Daily today. That's it for today's episode. You can listen back to all episodes of News Talk Daily on the Go Loud player. From me, Tara Duggan, that's it for now.